Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And silence reigned over the...
We're done.
Anyway, for the hour.
We don't need to say anything more. We've
right.
said us.
Since we gave our disclosure in the first hour, we won't tell you again that we are on the during the week secretly. Our secret identity during the week is that we are actually fee only registered investment advisory firm that manages portfolios for people.
Yes.
Okay, so I won't. Yeah. I won't tell them.
You don't have to tell them.
Oh, okay, that's
right.
good.
By
that's
not
good.
Telling them, you have told them.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And the telephone number's in here. If you'd like to call in and ask us a question, where we will do our best to be objective and apply our combined foolishness or wisdom, as the case may be, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We had a caller last hour. I didn't feel like I completely finished my side or your side there. We had another call come in that had to be from Arbitron, which was a little strange, very appropriate.
Right.
Lets us know why we have such high ratings. If they're calling that number and saying,
I mean, if
what,
they're calling radio stations and
what
ask if they're listening to
the are radio? You listening to right now?
Well, right.
I'm listening to me.
Right.
Yes, the question was about the Russell 2000 and about why not just investing in that. And it was a good question, and we kind of jumped on the caller a little bit by saying, oh, no, 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 and oh, no, 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 and again, we said some other things like, oh, no, no, no. We don't like index investing, but some people have no choice. They're doing it through an employer or something like that. That is completely reasonable to index invest. I think that it's possible to get a slightly better return with a manager that's involved in the same index, but that doesn't mean if it's the only thing available not to do it. Having said that, part of the rest of our answer was based on the concept that a lot of people have of just put all your money in one spot. And an index should be big enough that it'll diversify it. We have some issues with that because diversification isn't just having a lot of stocks. It's making sure that those stocks and bonds and everything else are in different parts of the market, different areas of the market, different sizes, different activities. The whole reason for diversifying is to avoid risk. To try to take on the risk of the overall system rather than of a specific area. And if you diversify into one small area of the economy, small cap stocks, and that's a small area of the economy comparatively, then you're taking on the risk of that area and you're not spreading it. Even though you're spreading it across small cap stocks, you're still not spreading it across the rest. And for some people, it may work out, but that's not the way we invest.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't listening the first hour, but...
Neither were we. That's fine.
That's okay. I was going to ask you guys, it seems like all of the, the budget crisis and the Social Security's broke and all of that stuff, it seems like Congress puts Band-Aids on these to get them through the next election.
I think Band-Aid would like that as, what is that, Johnson & Johnson?
Right.
They get a lot of money out of it. If the government would use a Band-Aid, it would be a very large one. It'd be a very large contract.
Yeah, they're not dealing, very frankly, they're not dealing with the long term. And I don't expect them to deal with the long term for a long time.
Well, that's my
for the
my
long term.
Question. It seems like long term for them is the next election.
It is.
Let's put on our Pollyanna hat. If politicians didn't care about getting elected and would speak of the truth, what would it take and how long, in your opinion, to make the tough decisions to get the country back on a good fiscal
it
path?
Did,
and I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
Wouldn't take any time at all. There's been two, three commissions that have been...
Yeah.
In the last few years, seven
different plans for the budget that have come out, all of which would work. The Simpson-Bowles Commission that's the one that I think you're talking about. Simpson-Bowles, the Ryan plan, the first one, not the second one. It has some issues. It wasn't as good as the Simpson-Bowles.
Well, the only problem with the Ryan plan, it made some assumptions that, frankly, don't have any basis in, well, you know, maybe if the moon were to rise in the west.
Right.
Type assumptions.
Well, yeah, the Simpson-Bowles study, the commission, two opposing parties got together and made this thing. They got together and they said, what could we do to make our budget balance over
right.
a period of time? And they said, we need to raise taxes a little bit. We need to cut spending a little bit. We've cut spending. It's happening. That's what's going on here. It's government spending has dropped drastically compared to what it was. It's still not as far down as I would like to see it. We're doing it the wrong way, but that's up to Congress. How long would it take? It's kind of Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Because the question is based on an absurdity. It's a very sad absurdity, but it's a true absurdity. And that is to say that people that get involved in politics have no self-interest.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But go ahead. Yeah,
yeah, I'm saying that's an absurdity because Will Rogers joked often, I don't need to have comedic writers, I have Congress. Things haven't changed that much. We could still look at what Congress is doing and the absurdity of what happens in that big domed building and say, are these adults?
Well, there's actually, and listen to a good comment, well, actually, both listen to and read a good commentary. There's a problem that we have in the United States, and it goes
only
back
one?
Along. Well, that's causing most of the issues in Congress.
Yeah.
And it goes back a long ways. It goes back to a Supreme Court decision and the Voting Rights Act.
Yes, I'm applauding you and, quietly
and
in the
what
studio.
What happened
this
is the Supreme Court decision and the Voting Rights Act, by the Supreme Court decision is basically one man, one vote, it's called. But the reason these very admirable issues have produced a serious problem is together they granted the right and the obligation to the states, to the legislatures of the various states, to redraw congressional districts in such a way that the legislature, in effect, picked the congressman and then found a set of voters who would elect that type of congressman.
Right. If you think about the legislature of the of Texas, it is Republican majority by far. They get to draw the district maps. Do you think that they might possibly have an incentive to draw it so that Republicans could win?
Yeah, and so what they've done.
And I'm not saying that this is a bad thing.
But
that's how it's being done.
The issue was that about 12% of America is African American.
Mm-hmm.
But practically nobody in Congress was at the time. Like, we only had one or two. And the lawsuit and the law that followed said that minority districts need to be carved out, which means somebody needs to go look at who lives where, carve out a district so that a black congressman or 3 or 5 or 12 or whatever get elected.
Yeah, this does not look like the rest of the country.
So that makes pretty good sense and is not completely objectionable. I don't think anybody would say that there should be no black people in Congress. But then we come along with the fact, now that that's happened, That by definition distorts all of the other districts around it. And now the House of Representatives and the legislature in the state is now obligated to draw districts to protect minorities. Well, by definition, they now are redrawing districts based on who lives there. They have the right and the obligation to do it. And so, of course, like Jake said, in Texas, there are a lot of Republicans dominating the legislature, conservative Republicans in the state. They have drawn a lot of legislative districts, as have other states, where, and by the way, this also happens over on the left side, where the Democrats, when they dominate, do the same thing.
They create
districts.
This is something people forget, that Texas was dominated by Democrats for a long time,
yeah,
and they did exactly that.
Right.
So both sides have done it.
So what happened, and I'm in Texas, and we're in Texas, so we're going to talk about Texas. Texas has created districts like Bell County and Williamson County are somewhat to the right of Attila the Hun somewhere. I don't know where we are, but we're pretty right-wing.
Wait a minute. Attila the Hun did not participate in our two-party system.
You know, basically, Rush Limbaugh in these two counties is considered to be a moderate.
Right. And Williamson for sure.
Right. And so we elect somebody who's pretty conservative. Now, this is the point. John Carter doesn't run against a Democrat. So he doesn't care what the Democrats think.
He's running in the primary. That's it.
The primary is the election. And in the primary,
because the district is Republican.
His greatest fear, as every other conservative Republican in the House, is that somebody will challenge them from the right in the primary. So they have to be moving further and further to the right. By the way, as the percentage of voters, and this is what's happening in the United States, who are far right, intensify and shrink.
Yeah.
Both are happening.
We're polarizing Congress.
Right. And so what we've done is we've gerrymandered ourselves into a corner where the liberals, the left-wing Democratic liberals, are extreme liberals, afraid of being attacked from the left, and the right-wing, the serious right-wing Tea Partyists, I don't know what you would call them other than that, are terrified of being attacked from the right. So they move further to the right and further to the left until the point where they can't even talk to each other. They cannot even... somebody would say, you talked to a liberal, therefore I should be elected instead of you.
Right. The concept here, let me take a step back, behind redistricting. The reason why we have a census is so that we know the race and genetic basic makeup of an area, so that we can draw districts that don't discriminate. In Texas, we have a very, very good example, because Texas has never really had, or in my lifetime anyway, has never really had a moderate legislature. It's either been extreme Democrats or extreme Republicans. And that's not necessarily a problem. It represents who we are as Texans. When there hasn't been, and this redistricting takes place after in the first legislative session after the census information comes in, and the census is done in the 10 years, so in the 10-year mark. So in this case, it was done in 2010. Before that, it was 2000. The census information comes in, and they're required by law to redistrict. They have to draw a map to make sure that they're not discriminating against minorities. And this was a very real problem. We have not, in my lifetime, had a redistricting map that stayed after the vote in the legislature passed it that said this is the map.
It's been
redrawn by the courts every time. That says something very clear. It says to me clearly that there's a bias in the political system. Really? Oh, big shock there.
Well, you know, and actually there's a solution to this.
Yes, there is a solution.
And if we come to this solution, we will be able to probably have a functioning federal government.
It won't be polarized.
But the people on the right will be unhappy, and the people on the left will be unhappy.
And those are, by definition, the people that are the loudest when something happens, because they have a lot of emotion involved.
In California, they actually have a commission that redraws the boundaries, and it takes a supermajority vote in the legislature to overrule them.
Usually when we talk about California here, just as a side note, we laugh at them. We think Californians are doing something really, really dumb. So this is a point, one of the few points that we both agree that California has done something right.
The Californian, you know, and a lot of people are not going to like this, but it was Jerry Brown, who used to be the ultra-liberal, who now apparently, a couple of things have happened in California. They balanced their budget and have a surplus this year.
What?
Now, here's the point. How did they do that? Well, first thing they did was redistrict, and they redistricted by setting up a commission that was composed, I think, I may have the numbers not perfect, but it's really close, something like 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, 4 Independents, and a mandate, and they had to use a consulting firm. And the mandate was they had to keep communities together to the greatest ability possible while meeting the election laws, so that the and we got them right now. The legislature produced a series of districts that all of which kind of reach into a little piece of Travis County to unseat Lloyd Doggett, Democrat, because obviously Travis County is very, very, very heavily liberal Democrat. Therefore, they broke Travis County up into little pieces in districts where the majority were conservatives. And that hasn't made the liberals very happy, but they haven't been able to elect anybody to the state house, so they're kind of out of luck on this. The point is that if we get communities together, and I will say that I probably won't change our district a bit because we got two counties that are next to each other that are right together. And by the way, the district before that, that again was drawn by the conservatives, had was a long little narrow thing that went way out into West Texas. And the issue is in California, they got districts that were drawn to look like communities that already existed on the map. And they wound up with a mixture of Democrats and Republicans in every district. They wound up with some serious debate going on as to who was going to win and which party was going to have the somebody in Congress. But more importantly, they got people in their legislature, although it was still dominated by the same party, but they got people who were afraid of being run against by the other party. And when that happened, they were willing to compromise and represent, look at all sides of a picture, and lo and behold, they were able to sit down and work out a budget in the state of California, whereby they balanced their budget and begin to pay off their huge deficit that was about to eat them alive. And, you know, I hate to say that California had a good idea about anything, but I think they had a good idea. They got the political process, they got the party politics out of redistricting and turned it over to a commission. And I personally think that was a really, really good idea. It's kind of like we don't want the Federal Reserve being run by a political party. And I don't think we want redistricting being run by a political party, but that's what we got. And until we fix that, the chances of Congress actually passing a budget and actually having a functioning, realistic Congress where they do things, they talk to each other, they come to some compromises, and they make things work, ain't going to happen. And you may say, again, you may, if you're on the right side of this, you may say, I really don't want Congress to function. I just want to get rid of Obama and Obamacare. Okay, it's not going to happen. It's too embedded in the economy at this point. And
too many people have coverage that didn't have it before. Yep. There's a lot of, get us wrong, there's a lot of problems with it, but let's look at reality. It's not going to be repealed.
And it's not going, in the right now, the extreme left and the extreme right, neither one have any desire to go in and fix it. They either want to destroy it or leave it alone.
There are problems that need to be fixed.
That's not a good solution. It could be fixed. There could be some major changes made if people were willing to compromise. The other thing is, and I want to mention this, this is an important thing to realize. Newt Gingrich's House of Representatives in the Congress at the time passed the Balanced Budget Act.
Yeah.
It's still in effect. The Balanced Budget Act says if you do something, if you either repeal or pass or whatever a bill, and you dramatically... And you change either the revenue or the expenses, an offset must be generated. Another bill must be passed. So the people who are talking about, by the way, cutting the medical appliances tax or whatever,
Well,
and dropping
the
revenue by $30 billion, that the Supreme Court would throw that out because there's a law.
Unless they come up with
they
a
They have to
solution.
Raise taxes someplace else $30 billion, or they have violated the law that was passed overwhelmingly by Republicans in order to balance the budget. So we're kind of, for that reason, if none other, they're not going to repeal Obamacare. You can't.
Yeah. You can't defund it in that way because in order to defund that, you would also lose money. If you lose money and you have a law on the books that says you have to spend the money, the federal government is not allowed to do that to itself because the federal government
said it
wasn't. Well, that's a law.
It was a law that was passed to get the budget back in balance. By the way, President Bush and the Republican Congress, when we started the war, the two wars, put them off the budget so we wouldn't have to raise taxes to pay for them, because the Balanced Budget Act would have required, if we're going to have a war in Afghanistan and an invasion of Iraq, we'd have to raise taxes to pay for the war.
So they called it emergency spending, even though it was the same emergency that lasted for a decade plus.
Well, there's also an emergency spending bill that went through for the prescription drug care benefit.
Right.
No taxes are raised for. So
when we make a law with an obvious loophole that Congress uses constantly, emergency spending and continuing resolutions aren't technically a budget. So a lot of the stuff in the continuing resolution doesn't have to meet the Balanced Budget Act. So they just say, we're not going to do a budget, we're going to do a continuing resolution.
Right. And it's, like I said, you asked the question, when could we fix all this stuff? And by the way, Social Security is not headed to broke. Medicare is no longer headed to broke, and you're not going to like this. This is not my opinion. This is a Congressional Budget Office, which again was set up by the Republicans, by the conservatives. The Congressional Budget Office has stated that the reason Medicare is not going to go broke is because of Obamacare, because of the funding from Obamacare. You get rid of Obamacare, you got to raise taxes.
There's a lot of things that are good about Obamacare. There's probably more things that are bad about Obamacare. So don't get us wrong by saying, oh, Obamacare, they love that stuff. There are a lot of problems in that act, and it needs to be fixed. We cannot fix that law until we stop trying to destroy the law. And the reality we try to look at with an economic mind isn't what we wish would happen. If we did that, we would be a political party. What we try to look at when we're looking at managing money is, what are the likelihoods of certain things actually happening? Not how hard are people working to do it, but what's the likelihood of the outcome? And when we look at the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, it's not going to happen. I mean, when any person that looks at this and says, all right, if we try hard enough, we can get it repealed. Just look at the makeup of Congress. You can't do it. There's no way you can get that passed. It's not going to happen. You could try. You can shut down the government. But the reality is that it's a no-go. And even if you talk to Republicans in the House, if you get them off the record, they recognize it. The numbers do not add up. If the numbers don't add up, you can't put all of your eggs into a basket with holes in it. They have to know that. But right now, they can't be effective in their roles. We've got an election year coming up. They can't be effective in their roles if they show any sign for support of Obamacare by trying not to repeal it or something.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here in the local area, 254-773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're going to break for commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. You're welcome to give us a call, ask us about anything, or comment about anything to do with money or investing, and we'd love to talk about it. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers to call in here are 773-1400 if you're in Bell County East, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
You know, in the midst of the brouhaha, that's one of my favorite words, by the way. It's an Irish word. It means free for all. But brouhaha sounds ever so much
better. I know what brew is. You got a beer, and then haha is laughing. So yeah, I know.
But it is. It's basically an Irish way of saying that a whole bunch of people get drunk and fight each other.
Yeah,
which probably is a good definition of Congress.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much what goes on.
In the midst of the brouhaha over Congress, what is sort of missing in the coverage? And I had to really hunt to find it because I heard it on the radio, and then I was looking for it. The median income in the United States rose, and it rose enough.
The reason why you really have to hunt to find it is it's good news. People can't report good news.
It's up to $52,100 a year for a median household income, which doesn't sound like much. As a matter of fact, it's still below where it was in 2007 rather, but we're getting back. We've still got to come up about 6.1% more, $3,400 a year, to get to where the median household income was in 2007. Now, why am I concerned about that? Well, the median income of households in the United States tells us pretty much what people have to spend, because if their income goes up, they have more money to spend. And since about 67% of our gross domestic product is generated by people spending money in those median households across the country, if we want a full-blown economic recovery, we really do need to have people to have more money to spend.
But, amazing.
Yeah, that's just astonishing. And, of course, that ties in almost perfectly with the issue we've been talking about inflation and deflation. Until the median income goes up in real terms, not just in when we're talking about I didn't adjust that for inflation
or whatever.
When the real median income gets back up to where it was in 2007 and then starts to rise in real terms, then we can concern ourselves a little bit with inflation. But as of right now, we're not even too terribly close to having as much money to spend. Now, where did all the money go?
That's an easy one.
Well, a lot of it disappeared, but there's an awful lot of it someplace else, too. It turns out that the last time they went around and looked at corporations, they have even more cash now on hand than they had before. Each quarter, we wind up with a record quantity of cash on hand in corporations. Now, why?
Good reason why.
Because they're scared.
Why. Yeah, well, you talked about this last week, and evidently to rave reviews, talking about the financial crisis,
now we got into it.
Right. One of the greatest weaknesses our economy had in 2007 was this massive dependency on credit. A corporation, if it wanted to spend money beyond its normal expenditures, if it wanted a new plant, if it wanted to hire employees, if it wanted to get new equipment, if it wanted to do anything, it would borrow the money.
And so would people borrow the money.
And people were doing the same thing.
And mostly they were borrowing money to flip houses.
Yes.
Wasn't there just an advertisement? Oh, yeah.
Craziness. Yeah. So these corporations are out borrowing money, and they have these great relationships with these wonderful bankers who are making lots of money on them, and everybody's happy. Until the banks no longer had the money to loan because the mortgages were not being paid in the other debts were coming due and not being paid, and the banks didn't have enough money to loan the corporations. And the corporations were saying, I don't think you understand. We're at record profits. We are making earnings like you wouldn't believe, and you're not going to give us a loan. And the bank said, don't have it, can't give it. So the companies that were making record profits the following quarter had to lay people off because they overspent their cash flow. This is one of the major causes of the 2008 collapse. We had too much easy credit, and then it all went away. Well, corporations and private citizens, for that matter, are afraid of that happening again for whatever reason. It's not likely to happen again, but it's just happened, and anybody that's ever had to lay somebody off, anybody that's ever had to fire somebody knows that's not a very fun thing. That is about the worst thing you can possibly do as a business person.
Yeah, but some people like doing it.
And they may be the worst possible business people.
I don't know.
They've got a call coming in. They're probably going to tell us, no, firing is fun. But anyway, what that means is that the corporations...
No, being fired is fun.
Oh, yes, that's great fun. Corporations have been stockpiling money. Same reason that people have stockpiled bullets. The reality is that Obama does not have the ability to repeal our rights to own guns. There aren't the numbers in Congress, just like we can't repeal Obamacare, we can't repeal the rights to own guns. The numbers are not there.
And as a matter of fact, neither the gun sales nor stock prices in gun manufacturers were affected by this last event at the Navy Yard.
Oh, they went up.
No.
More people have
not
purchased.
Much.
Yes. So the concepts here
in the
that
past
we're talking
have been
about,
big jumps. Yeah, in farm. Yeah. I think everybody's got.
Yeah, I've already got all of the stock over there that I need. So that concept there, we just have to hold on to that. That the reason why there's that much cash is because people are afraid that.
Well, there's a second reason. And they made a lot of money overseas, and they don't want to bring it home.
You bring it home, and we're going to charge them taxes again.
Okay, but we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Morning, Jeff. Morning, Jake.
Good morning.
I just saw something on the TV a little bit ago.
Was it a
good
cat?
Good, I'm glad.
Sometimes cats get on my TV, and it's a panel TV now, so I have to make sure they don't knock it over. They are upset because they used to have a big platform, and now there's just this like tightrope.
This was about the government going after the banks. This has begun to become public, I guess, since sometime yesterday. And, of course, numero uno for the government target was J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yep.
Well, you know, to call J.P. Morgan Chase a bank, it's really an investment bank. But go ahead, yes.
Well, you know, you also heard, maybe you didn't, I don't know, about Senator Lautenberg, I believe it was, New Jersey, died.
Mm-hmm.
And you may or may not have heard the news about the post-mortem amount of money that was authorized from the Senate, through the Senate, to provide to his widow. It was $175,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Of course, he was a multimillionaire, so that seemed kind of unfair to send taxpayers' money. But
Wait a minute. Let me give you a timeout here.
That's just a pension.
No, let me give you a timeout here. If an American soldier retires and has insurance through some form of military insurance program still, but also has $1 million in the bank, if he dies, should the government pay?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm a veteran.
Uh-huh.
And I have a government policy.
Now, would you be upset if, you wouldn't be upset if they didn't pay, but would the people that would be getting the money be upset if it didn't pay because you had other money?
Well, let me explain to you what happened with that policy. I kept it.
Let's talk about Lautenberg.
Yes. Let's get back to the original subject here real quick. That policy, when senators die.
It was changed to a 20-year pay.
Okay.
Okay.
And I paid it up.
All right.
Now, that takes care of that. As far as I know, I did not hear that this was an insurance policy.
No, it's not. We didn't talk about an insurance policy. We talked about the fact that basically, he had stored up value as an employee of the Senate, and they passed it to his widow.
Well, okay, that's fine. My point is, I was not that upset about it.
Okay.
I was merely pointing out that this was made big news, but I don't know if you fellows have read a book by Una McDonald. Does that name ring a bell with
you?
Not
at all.
Nope. No bells.
Okay. She wrote a book. She's British, by the way. Titled Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Okay.
And I'll just read to you a couple of sentences from that book, which I think are applicable. OFIO, that's a government outfit, began investigating bonuses and severance pay for Raines and Howard. Franklin Raines was the head of Fannie Mae.
So Raines held the reins at Fannie Mae.
Okay. Now,
especially after Fannie Mae disclosed that the former chairman and CEO was leaving with a severance package of $24.2 million, mm-hmm. excluding his $2.4 million annual salary for life, another $21 million in accelerated stock, potential future stock payments.
Now, have you got independent sources on this or just a book from a British writer?
Just the book.
Okay.
Well, no, not exactly.
Well, now, this is my point. I don't know if any of those things are true, and you can read them off and read them off and read them off. But the point is, I don't know that any of what you're reading to me is true, and neither do you. Do you know that? The fact that it's in a book doesn't necessarily make it true. Now, you may have a point, but I can tell you...
Because Daniel Mudd was the head of Fannie Mae during the collapse, and he collected around $9 million as a severance package when he left.
So the numbers you're giving are so outrageous that all that I have read about Fannie Mae suggests... I have never seen numbers that high in the actual real numbers of people who left Fannie Mae. Now, maybe there's something there.
They're high. I mean, $9 million is not a little thing.
Yeah, but not $24 million.
But I have not read about salary for life in any of these packages.
And if the salary for life in a bankrupt company is zero. So the point is that there may have been, for instance... One of the things that was that the I don't remember her name now, and I should remember it, who left FINRA to go to the SEC, and there was all kinds of outcry about she left with all this money, and why did they pay her all this money when FINRA is a nonprofit? What they were referring to was her 401k that she had been investing in for the previous 30 years, transferred. When she left the company, she rolled it over to an IRA. Well, they counted that as a severance. When the newspaper articles and the books counted that as a severance pay. The other thing is, stock options in a bankrupt company worth so many dollars? Come on.
Was there anything? I don't remember.
Advanced stock options. Remember that?
You talked
about that?
$21 million in accelerated stock.
Right.
Accelerated stock
was zero.
That's worth $0? How can you have $24 million worth of $0 stock?
That's true, yeah.
So right up front, I'm telling you, what you're reading me sounds like either a fabrication or a very unbalanced report. Now, I'm not saying that there were people in Fannie Mae who got way too much money. That may be.
And I'm looking at it. See, it says here, I'm going to read back some of the stuff that you just read. $21 million in accelerated stock. Well, we know that's zero. And it says excluding his $2.4 million annual salary for life. So that isn't even talked about because it's a bankrupt company. They don't do a salary for life. And when the severance package, they add up all this other stuff, and it says potential future stock payments valued at $34 million. Well, again, stock payments aren't going to be involved here. Undisclosed amount in a 401k. Well, the 401k is money that they've been putting away. It's not stuff that they're giving to them.
And let me get back to Lautenberg for just a minute, if I could, okay?
Yeah.
I've looked this up since we've been talking. When a member of Congress dies in office, every member of Congress for probably 100 years has had in a bill passed shortly thereafter 1 year's salary passed to the congressional widow, the widow of the congressman, okay? Lautenberg earned $174,000 a year, and this is the point. This is a very interesting point. The bill that came out of the House of Representatives, the continuing resolution bill to keep the government open, that was written one-sidedly by the conservative Republicans, had $174,000 going to Senator Lautenberg's widow.
And
the Senate simply did not remove it from the bill when they voted.
So basically, coming back to that, the statement about it, it isn't an insurance policy, but it is an understood fact of life that if you die as a congressman, you're going to get 1 year's salary paid to your heir. I mean, it's really easy to point at this and say, why are we giving $174,000 to somebody that's got $56 million as their net worth?
Oh, it's interesting here.
But that's class baiting.
We've been doing it since the 19th century, according to the Congressional Research Service.
And it's the same as if you make $174 million a year and somebody wrecks your car. Oh, well, you don't need them to pay you back for it because you have a lot of money. That's class baiting. It has nothing. The fact that he's a millionaire should have nothing to do with the fact that there's a tradition in the Senate and the House stating that if you die while in office, your heir gets a year's salary.
And incidentally, in the 2011 budget deal that the Republicans signed off on in 2011 when they went to the brink on the borrowing, remember that? They specifically exempted payments to widows and heirs of deceased members of Congress from budget cuts. That came from. So Senator Lautenberg's widow got $174,000 because the conservative caucus in the House of Representatives wrote it and authorized it twice.
And
well, doesn't bother me that much.
Okay, but that's what you were talking about.
Really.
See, this is the facts. And so if you go into the Fannie Freddie thing, for example, a lot of people are blaming Fannie and Freddie for the real estate collapse in the United States, right?
Yes.
Why did it happen in Spain worse than in the United States?
Well, I don't know anything about the Spanish.
They don't have a Fannie and Freddie in Spain.
Well,
but it was worse. The real estate collapse that happened at the same time in Spain was worse than the one that was in the United States.
Now, we're not saying that they weren't culpable, but they're just as culpable as other banks, as any other bank. And the fact that the government was involved in some manner with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the fact that I consider them to be corrupt institutions from the beginning, has nothing to do with the fact that the rest of the world didn't have them and they had the same collapse.
Yeah, so,
well, I would like to explain one thing.
What's that?
This book that I'm talking about, I learned about it from Barron's. It was written up in Barron's.
Okay.
And the first on the back cover is the first comment is from Peter Wallison. You've heard of him?
No.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Arthur Burns Fellow in Financial Policy Studies, American Enterprises.
I'll take your word for it, but I don't know. And again, you can quote all those people, but there's a fact. And the fact is that you look at numbers like that, you can go online, and you can check out the validity of the numbers. You can check out other people's comments about them. I've read lots of books, and I have read lots of things in books that were shocking and horrifying to me until I looked them up and found out they just weren't true.
Well, of course,
we have freedom of the press and freedom of expression in the United States, which means that a person can write an email or write a book, and they can say pretty much anything in it they want to say, and they're exempted from almost any attack once they legitimately publish something. You know, I mean, I get, if you don't believe it, go to the grocery store and in the checkout line, look at the Globe or the National Enquirer, and look at the absolutely absurd things they're saying about people in there.
Except of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were pivotal in the collapse because they're largest mortgage banks in the United States.
As a matter of fact,
Countrywide is right up there with it. Completely, I mean, Countrywide was doing a lot more risky things. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were doing a lot less risky things, but they were still doing risky things. There was a euphoria going on that was way beyond what it should have been in the real estate market. People looked at Americans and said, Americans pay their mortgages. And that was the error. We thought if everybody gets a mortgage, everybody will pay, but not everybody deserves to have a mortgage. And unfortunately, we have commercials to play.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Bye-bye. And you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to break for commercials, and we'll be back just for a few minutes on the other side. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And only about 2 minutes left this hour.
And we have a call on 773-1400. Before we put the call on the air, though, I just want to say that we do not have anything to do with the commercials that just preceded this part of the show. And buyer beware. And caller, you're on the air with The Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Thank you, guys. I'll make it quick. What is the ruling of the law on required minimum distributions at 70 and a half if you're still working full time. I'll hang up and let you answer that. Thank you.
All right. Quick answer, quick question. Quick answer is that the Congress passed that law because they want to get paid their taxes. And they feel like that if you don't pay it now...
If you're putting money into a 401k, you don't have to distribute out of the 401k that you're putting money into.
Correct.
If you have an IRA, you got to get your distributions. Now, that is very complex, and there's a lot of words on this, so I'm not going to nail this one down with that one. You do need to talk to, I would recommend you talk to a CPA and get official on it, because these things change rapidly, and I'm coming off information that's now 6 months old, and who knows. In the latest bill, they might have changed it.
The second to latest bill, they may have changed it.
Yeah, and so just, you know, generally speaking, if it's you got to take your RMDs even though you're working. And we do have clients who are taking RMDs while they're working.
The reason for it is you haven't paid taxes on that money yet, and Congress wants to get theirs.
Yes, and you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. I don't think we're going to be broadcasting next week. It'll be a rerun, unless you're going to do it by yourself. And but if you wanted to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail at 947-1111. Of course, during the week, there's people there answering the phone.
You can also reach us toll-free at 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can go and send us an email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can also go to tpwc.com and listen to our podcast there.
And read lots of good stuff that we put on there.
So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Show.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.